But when they're reading scripts, the biggest challenge they face is the rating system. And so the rating system, when it's an excessive amount of profanity, the director may kick it back and say, well, can you get rid of this, like, 19 F-bombs in the first 3 pages? Can you dial those down? And, of course, the writer will do that. It's what's happening is the trend that I'm seeing is because so many families are trying to get out to the theaters and they're turning off to Hollywood in general, that profanity is now being taken with a much more measured tone.
And welcome to Simply Scripts Radio. I'm your host, Mike Shelton, back after a one-show hiatus. I guess, you know, it's been a couple weeks, or maybe it was last week. We actually are doing back-to-back weeks this time. I'd like to thank Pia for stepping in and hosting in my absence, and she is on the call tonight. So welcome to Pia, also to Phil, Michael Cornetto, and our guest, who is a rather elusive person in the business as far as writers go. It is an agent, and her name is Barbara Patella. Welcome to the show, Barbara.
Hey there, how are you, Michael?
We're doing well. I'm imagining everybody else that's on the call is doing well, too.
Hi, everybody.
Well, you know, how about you just start out, you know, give us a little bit of background about yourself.
You bet. I started out with Silver Patella Agency really pitching myself as a writer of a novel that was adapted to a screenplay, and I became a junior agent in 2007, and part of my job was to learn how to read and interpret a pitch, how to learn and interpret a log line. We'd get pitches from all around the world. And my boss, Ed Silvers, got pretty much Hollywood in his blood. He was Lee Marvin's manager forever, and he managed Toto's financial well-being. And he was in the back nine of his life, so he asked me to take over, and I did, because of my PR background and my extensive novel experience. I teach screenwriting and novel writing. And after that happened, we got a couple of million-dollar pictures in the pipeline. And once that happened, I got promoted. So I got my name on the banner, which is nice, but you know, it didn't matter one way or the other. You just work the phones, you work the facts. Being a partner is a little significant, mostly because we're a WGA franchise, and what that means is that most of the companies are signatory, so they have to use union folk, and we are, of course, signatory. Now, that doesn't mean we can't represent non-WGA writers, because everybody's got to start somewhere. So I am a full-time agent. Actually, I work far too much for far too little, and I do have a couple of million-dollar pictures in the pipeline. I've got a couple that are very, very cheap as well, and I actually even represent a guy who's a director and an actor, and he's quite talented as well. So I'm really getting some solid face time, and that's why I need Simply Scripts.
Well, I don't know if we can give you solid face time here, you know.
I just saw your picture. You just did.
I guess we're doing okay, you know. We're getting a pretty good amount of downloads per show. You know, people are listening. We would like to get more feedback from people, you know, so we even you know, anything we could get, we appreciate, but, you know, just we like people to keep those things coming in. Now, as far as, like, you know, the representation angle and stuff like that, being an agent, you know, having the website out there and all that and the different submission policies, do you find yourself getting a lot of queries, you know, from all over the globe? Do you get a lot of queries in general?
I get a lot of queries from around the world. I get a lot of queries from prisoners. I get actually some soft porn, which is turned over to the Fed. We don't even open it. We just take it and take it right. We have a Sacramento Federal Bureau of Investigation branch right here, believe it or not. We get so much crap in the mail, you can't even believe it. If it's a DVD and there's a pitch with it, we'll throw it out. We'll keep the pitch. People send us candy. People send us. I mean, you can't even believe it. We need one piece of paper with a log line, a genre, a page count, whether or not it's gotten coverage, beginning, middle, and end of the movie, and it's okay to tell us the ending. We're not going to tell anyone. And what we need to know is if you've gotten coverage, because if you don't know what coverage is, then therein lies why I'm here. I'm here because I see a lot of very well-written scripts at your site, people who are unproduced, but they are not marketable. And that's what I'm trying to bring to the table, a little bit of education as to what a good spec script is that's marketable. There's a difference. And so as we go through this interview, don't let me forget to give you some of the tips as to what people who find the money are looking for and what directors expect to see on the page. And I'm talking spec script now. I'm not talking shooting, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. By the way, I learned a ton of stuff just going through your site. I mean, I can't believe how many people don't know about it. I tell everyone who has a pulse that you guys are out there. And I mean everyone, even producers. I ask them point blank, have you, because they're looking for product. I go, have you checked the site? Go look. Go troll for material. If you don't want to read it, send it to me. I'll give you a fast, dirty read, 30 pages. I'll let you know if there's something there.
Have a sip of your wine, Don.
Oh, that sounds good.
Yeah. I mean, there are a number of people that are going to the boards and looking for scripts. Unfortunately, it is, well, I guess not so unfortunately for some people, but, you know, I mean, it's getting work out there. A lot of it is, you know, film students, new people that are, you know, looking to start directing or whatnot, and they're looking pretty much for shorts. And, you know, actually there's one piece that I'm going to give away right now is that there is a pattern of shorts that are picked up. And I don't know if anybody else has ever noticed this, but a lot of times when you see these emails coming through or posts on the board, like, oh, yeah, my script has been picked up and somebody's going to film it, look at the letter of the alphabet that it starts with, because it's usually right near the front. So I'm saying somebody, you know, probably read 3-4 scripts. They came up, you know, to this script that was named
brilliant.
Abracadabra, and,
brilliant.
And, well, you know, I will say this. I have been contacted 25 times minimum for a script entitled 180 numbers.
Oh, I bet. I bet.
So it's like I cracked the Da Vinci Code. So I'm just going to share that with people out there. So, Don, if you get hit with a bunch of scripts that start with numbers or A letters, I'm at fault.
Mentality. No, it's the Google mentality. It's the Yellow Pages mentality. We're trained by Yellow Pages. That's how we start. You get the first 4 or 5 A's, the first 4 or 5, you know what I mean? The very, very top. And then it's the same thing with Google. What are you going to check? 250,000? You're going to go for the first 5.
Right. So, I mean, that's just something, you know, that I eventually figured out and, you know, I used it to my advantage, I guess. But, I guess that's a little reward for the people who have actually listened 10 minutes into the show.
I guess this means that Zombie Chicken will never be produced, huh?
Hey, wait, listen, Zombie Strippers 2 has just started pre-production.
Oh, dear God.
Yeah, and the guy is a really nice guy. The producer, he did Zombie Strippers, the first one. I mean, I don't think he's made any money on it yet. Who the hell knows? But he's doing Zombie Strippers, too. He's got backers, and he's shooting it. The moral of the story is this. If you can get, he who has the money wins. So if you can find money to get your stuff made, great. But don't let me forget about some of the tips about the writing and the pitching, and don't let me forget about what the current climate is, because all of those points... that's the main reason why I wanted to do this, is because I've learned so much in the last 2 days, and I do this every day, that I really want to share it with your audience, mostly because I know your audience will benefit from it, because they're all writers.
Okay, well, I'm going to guarantee that you won't forget about it, because we can talk about that right now.
Oh, great.
We have about a 35-minute show, generally, so you know we're going to squeeze in as much as we can and just keep rolling along.
Okay. The first thing I want to recommend that the writers do when they do their script is they must, before they even post it, they've got to do a table read. In the absence of, and I'm not talking about sitting around with 6 of your friends drunk. I'm talking about you getting 6 people in a room. Everybody gets a couple of roles each. You, as the writer, you read the slug lines and the action lines and keep your mouth shut. Just listen to it. My family does table reads for me when I'm not sure about a script. Because hearing the words, imagine this if you please, you are competing against 12 to 15,000 established WGA paid writers. When you say to me something on a page like, oh, she's just as thick as a brick. If I hear a cliche like that, I'm going to think you're a lazy writer. Why? Because a cliche is an opportunity for you to rewrite a cliche. So I tell my students, it's okay to put the ugly duckling on the page in a draft, but anytime, and you could put thick as a brick, but if you see that cliche, that's an important safety tip for you. That means go back and rewrite it. You know, that's an opportunity opportunity for you to rewrite something. And let me tell you, rewriting cliches gets people's attention. I read a line in a script. It went like this. This is the head of a Federal Bureau of Investigation division. And the guy says to one of the agents who's really busting his chops, the guy goes, you know, I should buy a condo between a rock and a hard place. I live there so much with you. Now that is brilliant. Okay. So what I'm saying to you is, meaning you, the general you, is use your head. Something else that's important, and this is very subtle, but it's critical. The use of passive voice on the page is very troubling because people do not know how to narrow it down and get rid of it. So I will explain. Do not use ing words and do not use ly words. You need hard, solid verbs, adjectives, because readers read all day long. The trouble with reading is you have to read all day long. Most professional readers like me, folks in the business, we're going to give you maybe page one, maybe. We might get to page 5. Oh my God, if we can get to page 30, that's a brilliant sign. How do we get there? Don't say walking out of the drugstore. He was thinking about shooting the clerk. You say he walked into the drugstore. He had a gun. He might kill the clerk. He might not. He didn't have his meds today. You don't talk like it's a novel. The more white on the page, the better. Now, there's a caveat to that. The Camerons, the guy who wrote Usual Suspects, the guy who wrote Sixth Sense, these guys can do that because they're at such a level that they can get away with a lot more. But our writing, the writing we've got to see now, it has to be solid, visual, and haiku-esque. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, same thing with the pitch. Let me give you the trick on how to write a log line. Number one, you have to read Save the Cat. If you don't read Save the Cat, you got no business in this business. That's the first thing. The second thing is, it's verbs plus nouns, and I don't mean a person's name necessarily, but you could use it if you want to. Verbs plus nouns plus irony equals log line. That's all it is. You have to put the irony in the log line because that is your hook. And that is what makes a pitch exciting. Because if I see, we are what we are. All of us, me, you, Shelton, everybody. We're wordsmiths. Our job, I tell my students, if you don't own Rodale's thesaurus, you're missing something great. This thing is like the thesaurusinator. It's like a thesaurus on steroids. This thing is a monster. You can find 100 ways to say stone in that book. And but you gotta know what's the verb, you know, but it's so cool. This will ramp up your writing as much as the table read, throwing out your clunkers, throwing out your cliches, and not writing passively. Passive writing is a challenge on the reader's eye. It just is. It slows them down.
Wow. Yeah, I can agree with that, definitely. I mean, I'm sure most, if not all, the people on this call can agree with that as well.
Yeah.
It's a critical part of getting a reader's attention. I can tell you straight up, media, right, when you get in the middle of a scene and you open with that, oh man, you're locked in. I have a guy, I can pick his scripts out of a stack without knowing his name on it. Here's what you learn. When you stand and listen to a table read, you learn about your voice. Believe me when I tell you, everyone has one. Some writers are terrific with action. Others are terrific with dialogue. I'm blessed with a very good ear for dialogue and pace. I'm a good editor. I am not a screenwriter. I don't know how you guys make the magic you do it. It continually inspires me. But I can tell you that some of the writers that I've seen on the unproduced category, they just don't get dialogue. And here's what's critical. If they get nothing from this interview, they need to get this. If a producer with chops says to you, please give me an option for 6 months for a dollar so I can try and run around and set it up, don't fight them. Do it. Because if they're willing to work for you for no money and risk their connections and you bitch and moan about it, oh my God, this is not the business for you. Something else. I just sold a script. A really nice man bought a script, paid cash. The writer's thrilled. She's getting a credit. The script we sold looks nothing like the shooting script. It is a completely different movie. So if you're looking to see your babies and your words on the screen, I can almost promise you, unless you get to the level of the Camerons and the big shots out there, that's not going to happen. Or shoot it yourself. Get the money together and shoot it yourself. Because anybody who thinks that their words are good, I can tell you right now, if the woman that I sold her script for, it's for television, it's going to be a really great picture. If there is 30% of her writing in there, that's a lot.
Yeah, I've gone through situations like that myself. I would say, yeah, probably pretty close. Right, I've had something end up where it was about 30% of what I had written was what was in the finished product.
And, check bounce?
No. No, and then, and the dollar option thing and stuff like that. I mean, it's something for 6 months. I mean, in the grand scheme of things, that's nothing.
You bet.
Definitely good advice there. Most of what I talk about on here when, we don't have a guest is my experience and stuff like that. So, I can definitely, see what you're saying and where you're coming from.
Yeah, but you got your feet on the ground. I have to tell you, that is not where most writers sit. And you know what? That's okay. That really is okay. One of the things that makes writers so great is the fact that their feet are not on the ground. But when an agent sits you down, I'm the priest, okay? You're gonna have to, at some extent, relax and trust the people that know what they're doing. You have to. Now, that doesn't mean you follow them off a cliff, but I'll give you an example. I met with a very big producer yesterday. She's a gem, brilliant. Everybody knows her. She gets stuff done. She doesn't have too much trouble raising money either. And in this economy, that's a bear. Two guys in New York pitched her. She loved the story. She wanted to run with it. She wanted to give a dollar option for 6 months. She said, let me run it around. They wanted $25,000. These are two unproduced writers with a manager. God only knows why they have a manager. I know the need for a manager for some. Some people can't find an airplane on the right day like me. But what I'm saying is when someone with that kind of background asks you for 6 months, you give it to them. I mean, you'd have to be out of your mind to go, we want 5,000. We want 25. Are you drunk? Do you drink before 11 a.m.? This is a business where we work for free. We have to hustle. We have to have passion. More importantly, we have to be in love with your story. Because even though it's going to get changed anyway, that is the thing that's going to get it attention, is that passion from me, from the producer, from the right, from the director. If they don't have passion, it's not going to go.
Mm-hmm.
And that's my core competency. Oh, if I'm in love with your story, get out of my way. I will take it to anybody with a pulse.
You mentioned before that you like to go to look at the scripts on the boards. Have you contacted anyone?
I did. I contacted one guy, and he gave me a hard time, so I blew him off because he just gave me a terrible time. I said to him, he said, I want to see your website. I want to know who you are. I want to know what you sold. Okay, important safety tip. I don't disclose any contract deals to anybody anywhere. Nobody does. The big shots might say, oh, yeah, this guy got six figures, and they are allowed to do that. I'm a guild member. I am not. I can't disclose any deal points to anybody at any time. And this guy's script was, the first five pages was really good. But, when I smell a noisy client, I'm a fascist. I'm not gonna take them on. I won't get past page five. I run things my way.
I was going to say, if you had contacted Phil until you said the first five pages were really good, and then that.
It's be nice.
Oh, come on. So, I was wide open for that.
Okay, so are we on to questions and stuff now, or? Friday or what?
Yeah, if you got questions, go ahead, feel free.
Yeah, right before we started this recording, we were talking briefly about profanity, and I wanted to hear more because you, Barbara, you said that you and your agency don't like it, and you also said that most producers don't. And I asked you, are you talking about screenplays or in relations when you're talking to these people? So could you please go over that again and tell us all about that? Because I not only do I read a lot of scripts with profanity in it, and I put it in my scripts too, but also I see it like, for example, on the boards when people are communicating with each other. So would you please tell us a little bit about the etiquette there and what people are looking for?
You bet. But I would rather not speak to etiquette. I'd rather make it a little more subjective, if that's okay. So let's talk personally for a moment, then we'll talk about business.
Okay.
Actually, let's flip that. Let's talk business and personal.
Okay.
Business. Hollywood Reporter 5 years ago did a report based on audience attendance. they talked to parents as they were leaving all around the country. What did you think of the movie? How'd you like the characters? Was it, you know, was it interesting? Did you like it? Did you have fun? The biggest complaint from parents, regardless of the rating, by the way, I mean, we're talking PG-13, but the biggest complaint, why'd they have to curse so much? Yeah. Why are they cursing so much? What is that about? Now, this is, by the way, before violence. I think the 13, 15, 18, get the 17, get the whole it's make-believe thing. But it's because the language has been it's been degraded. Now, I have to tell you, let's get to readers, producers. If it is the character's voice, let's say the person is Tony Soprano, it's expected. If it's not there, it's considered silly. What happens with producers and what I hear and see with a variety of directors is this. It's when the writer uses that as a crutch and they can't get past it. That what that tells them is that the through line, the story, that I'm not talking about the pumpkin, the Cinderella. I'm not talking about her glass shoes. I'm not talking about the fairy godmother. I'm talking about how she got the dirt on her toes, the through line. What makes Cinderella Cinderella? When they hear that person's voice not coming through and cursing and profanity used as a crutch, it's a turnoff. It turns them off to the writer because they feel and they see the writer is perhaps being a little bit lazy. Now, let's talk personal. I don't care how you talk. It's your business. I'm from New York. I have F in my DNA, right? In New York, we use the F word like it's a comma. The industry talks that way too. What we are hearing and seeing, however, is that the harshness of that language is beginning to wear on people. It's palpable. In fact, I challenge you to go into any LA coffee shop and not start when you hear the F-bomb dropped repeatedly. You will notice that there is an ugliness that's coming into the language that's profound. That's like the Titanic. It's slowly moving away from the iceberg. It's going to have a few hits, but it's slowly moving. I, for a fact, have several characters and two scripts in particular. They have to curse. They would be Tony Soprano with an apron if they didn't curse. But the fact of the matter is, if you can avoid it, use your head because you can create a lot of tension without cursing. If the character is drawn properly, you don't need a lot of profanity. I remember a caller calling into a show that I did a while ago, and he said, you know, I noticed that there was no cursing in The Matrix. Think about that for a minute. I noticed there was no cursing in The Matrix. I mean, there's like almost no profanity in that movie.
Yeah, actually, I just watched The Matrix trilogy with both the skinny kid and the fat kid, and that was... You know, one of the reasons I let them watch it was because it was just all violence, and we could talk that through, and it wasn't respected people swearing like crazy.
I find that totally interesting because I don't remember those movies like exactly what was said and all this and that, but in my head I have this idea that it was definitely an R-rated movie, and if somebody asked me, was there a lot of cursing, I would have said, yeah, absolutely. So that's,
you have to have it in Pulp Fiction. You have to have it in The Sopranos. You have to have it in a picture that I'm representing called Surviving Lost. It's a rape survivor revenge picture. Has to be there. Without it, it just simply will not resonate with an audience. They're too savvy for that. What I'm talking about is frivolous, and lazy writing. I guess that's all I'm talking about is lazy writing. I mean, I used the F word and the S word today a couple of times in a conversation with somebody because I was pissed off. I try not to do that because it really downgrades the quality of what I'm trying to tell them. I don't want to be reduced to the ridiculous by having to say the F word or the S word. And our agency doesn't like it and Ed can't stand it. Now that is a very personal thing. There's something else that's more important than that, which I think speaks to the overall condition of the industry, and that is a lot of producers and a lot of companies are looking for faith-based material. They're trying to get, the audiences are moving away from them because of this incredibly rude and abusive appearance of women, the downgrading of some of the characters that you see on screen, some of the really raw stuff. Families don't know where to go. they really don't know where to go, and they want to go to the movies. One of our specialties now is family fare, because we get so many calls for it. I will tell you this, however, there's a caveat to that as well. Lifetime is constantly looking for ripped from the headline stories, but you will notice when they air them that I mean, the worst word they may use is hell or damn.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think what you're saying is amazing, and I want to thank you for talking about this, because I think a lot of people hadn't even realized it, and I had not either, you know. And I read so many scripts, and it's like, you know, it's the F word, or, you know, and now I don't even dare saying it on this show, but, you know, it's as common as a comma. You know, mm-hmm. So, well, thank you for, you know, talking about that. I have one more question, if I could, before.
Oh, take your day, as yeah. many as you like.
You were saying earlier that there's a big difference between marketability of a script and a good script. You said you can read a really good script, but doesn't mean it's marketable.
Correct. And here's the elements that make something marketable. The less novel-like a script appears, that is to say, more show, less tell. There's a thing called the fan test. A lot of, if they get a hard copy, they don't do it so much anymore now. They can see it on the screen. If they hold the script and they fan it, they can see how much black is on the page. If there's too much black on the page, the reader knows, I'm not going to have a lunch break today. The reader's eye wants to go down the page, not left to right, left to right, left to right, left to right. That is exhausting and tedious. Some exposition is needed sometimes. If you look at the script, Usual Suspects, it's the reason why that's so easy to read is because most of us have already seen the movie. But I can tell you it takes a brilliant mind to preen through all of that vernacular to get to the essence of what that story is. And you know why that script sold? The first 5 pages. That is an exception. There are some out there. Cameron is one of them. But if you want to get the attention of the industry, you write as lean as you possibly can. I was talking about the cop earlier who was thinking about going bad, and he was going to have this affair with this woman, and she was married. It was a big old mess, and I had the writer sent me a full paragraph, 5 lines, explaining to what he was going through. And I said to her, I challenge you to get that down to a sentence. Get it down to a sentence. And she outdid me by getting it down to a word, and the word was purgatory, the place he was straddling, the rock and the hard place that he was completely stuck in. And that is what you have, as a writer, you must challenge yourself to find new words, rethink cliches, do table reads. Table reads are so extra. I have gotten more students email me and go, Barb, I know you hated my script. I know it was a pass, but I can't thank you enough for suggesting a table read. Because it makes you, that actors, when actors say, my character wouldn't say this, they're not being necessarily a diva or a devo. What they're saying is, I know this character won't say that. That is very critical. There is voice. Every character has to have their own voice. And if you want a marketable script, you not only keep the pages lean, you keep the voices consistent. How do you do that? Slap a dossier on the wall. Put 8.5 by 11 pieces of paper saying, this guy hates the color black. He's constantly eating Crepe Suzette. He never has coffee. He always has tea. And he talks with a slight lisp. I know that character is not going to love steak if he's always eating crepe. In fact, steak may turn him off. But what I'm trying to tell you is there are ways that you can create visual characters with very few words, unlike what I'm doing here.
what you're talking about there then, as far as the marketability and a good story, or you know, you said a good script, it's not really about story, but more about the style of writing?
Yes, it really is. What you're seeing now is a couple of things. Number one, there's very few staff everywhere. People are pressed for time. And don't let me forget about concept versus script, because that is the biggest challenge we face so far. That is the biggest hurdle that every producer and every company has. And that speaks to the volumes of scripts that end up in turnaround, the piles on the desk. There's a great concept when he pitched me, and then I read the script and it sucked. Well, what happened? What happened? You don't know who your characters are. That's nice about, like I said earlier, it's nice about the pumpkin, it's great about the shoes, and the fairy godmother, oh, she's so cute. But what happened that made Cinderella who she was, that she had to sneak out in the middle of the night, trusting someone who no one sees but her? How did the dirt get between her toes? what made her that way, so optimistic with the battering she took from a stepmother and these pain-in-the-neck girls, that she was able to find something within her to get out of the house and go meet a guy and end up in a pumpkin. What is Cinderella's story? That is your through line is everything. In the absence of through line, there is no story. There's cliche, there's flip, there's savviness, there's cleverness. I got a pitch from a guy. He wrote a great concept, terrific pitch. It's about five guys in the middle of nowhere. They manage a movie theater. They're a bunch of slackers, and they get an opportunity to do a big movie opening. And the script was so bad. And I said, please rewrite it. I'm begging you. There's a story here. Look at your lead guy. You've got Yoda in the basement. He's like everybody's mentor. Come on, rewrite it. I'm not changing a word. It's perfect. It's done. Really? Why don't you go get coverage and you come back to me in 2 months and you tell me what you think when you get a pass? Oh, and by the way, I will sign writers who get a pass with coverage if I think the story has merit or I think the characters can be flushed out. And I'll sign them, even if they're unproduced, even if they don't have an option, and I'll flush it out for 6 months. I did that with one script for a year, and I got a ton of traction, and I couldn't get it going. It doesn't mean it was a bad story. I just didn't find the lightning, which speaks to the ultimate, ultimate irony in everything we do. You and I are storm chasers. That's all we are. We have to trap lightning. We are matchmakers. There's no who's sleeping with who's whining and dining with who. That is old news. That is old Hollywood. Right now it comes down to who's got the money, who can put it in escrow, who can guarantee its distribution, and who can make $3 on one. End of story. That's it. That is the business in its entirety. The producer wants to know that he's going to get paid and that his investors are going to trust him again with another $1 million.
Wow.
So I've been sleeping with all these people for nothing?
Well, not for nothing from what I've heard.
All right, well, I got the message coming through. It's time to wrap things up, so I would...
Did we get an ending to this?
No, I'm we sorry. Didn't.
Okay, come on. Okay, let's get an ending, and then we can chat afterwards, because I got a ton of stuff to say. So, okay, I'm sorry.
Let's talk about concept, because that's where the rubber hits the road.
We're over time. Hey, Michael, jump in and fix this. Go. Operator.
You're on your own, guys.
Producer, hello.
You're on your own.
I'm just trying to help you out, man. I'm just trying to close this thing out so then afterwards we can all start talking at each other.
Okay. Well, in that case, thank you very much, Babs, for being our guest today. You did fantastic. That was a great show.
Absolutely.
And And you're welcome back anytime you want to come back. And thank you all for listening to Simply Radio.
You guys,
hey.
Questions. Hey. Thank you. Very, very sweet.
Okay, so Michael, you've said cut, right? So now we can all, start dropping the F-bomb and...